BSMradio.com.
BSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Welcome back in hour number three of the program here on this wet and windy Friday. And those who have been listening to this program or listening to me on Spooky South Coast for the past 18 years, you know that I am a big proponent of preserving our New England history, that so much of it is around us. We see it every day and we don't realize how important it was to us sometimes until it's gone. And that's the case in Danvers, where there is a very important historical building that is on the verge of being demolished because of neglect. And there's an effort, a grassroots effort, to try to save the Nathaniel Ingersoll Tavern in Danvers because of its connections to the Salem witch trials. Joining us now on the line, we have the Queen of Halloween, Dani October. She's going to be giving us some more information about this. Good morning, Dani. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for bringing this up and sharing the important cause here of trying to save this tavern.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's such an important building pertaining to the witch trials of 1692. It is just paramount that this building be saved.
So let's talk a little bit about the role that it played. So the building itself, the tavern, was built in 1670, I believe. So what would that have been in that time period? What would, you know, we think of a tavern now as a place to go to eat and drink, but what would the tavern have been in Salem in 1670?
So Nathaniel Ingersoll started it in 1670. It was built in 1670. He started it around 1677, the tavern, but it's pretty much in 1692, very much the same thing. It was like the social hub, the center of the village. So this is where everyone did go to eat and drink, and there was an inn above it where people would stay, kind of like a little hotel. So during the witch trials, though, in 1692, this building was just so important because this is where the first three accused women were brought. So they were accused of witchcraft. They were arrested. They were brought to this tavern, to this very building, and they were held in the rooms upstairs. So this tavern kind of also served like a jail for them. It's extremely important. Later on, it went on to hold about 30 more people accused of witchcraft. And not only did it hold the people, but downstairs, so much happened. There's so many incredible stories in terms of like the witch trials that happened downstairs as well.
I mean, this was a place where, you know, the important people, the movers and shakers involved in this trial, they were probably meeting there and discussing this. So before they were at the meeting house, you know, putting all of these accused witches on trial, they're probably talking strategy in this tavern.
They were. It was actually where the local government met and made laws. It happened right in the bar room in that tavern. The local militia was right across the street. So you had soldiers from the French and Indian Wars going in and out. So it was more than even just the tavern. It served multiple purposes. But in between the meetings, so you had the parsonage, which was right nearby. That was where the minister lived. You had this tavern, and then you had the meeting house. So it was like this holy, ground zero trinity of very important sites for the Salem witch trials. Now the parsonage is gone. The meeting house is gone. The tavern is all that remains. And in between the meetings down the road, the magistrates, the afflicted girls, all the townsfolk would come to this tavern and they would discuss what was happening. It was a very exciting place, actually, almost to the point of theatrical, because the girls would perform their afflictions right in the tavern. They would be falling to the floor there. They would be accusing people. They would be saying they see specters flying around the tavern. So much happened there.
So and so this is a place that is not only important in that story, but also in Salem's overall story, because as you said, in addition to being involved in the witch trials, it was an important center point for everything that was going on in the town. So this is something that is, you know, all of the fabric of Salem of that era and beyond is tied in and woven into this tavern.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. What were you going to say, guys?
Well, I was going to say, with that in mind, you would think that this would be a place that has been revered for all these years, but apparently that hasn't been the case.
Strangely not, you know. So, like, after it was a tavern, it went through the 1700s and 1800s. It fell into, like, the church's hands. So it actually became a parsonage for the minister who lived there. And it was in the 1900s again that it went into like private ownership, which is where it is today. And that's kind of like where the problem comes in, because now it's privately owned. And even though it's on the historic register list, it's strangely not protected. So like in the town of Danvers, like what's going on today is we have a couple of laws protecting historic structures. You can't just knock them down, right? Like that's just not going to happen. But there is actually no law saying that you can't buy a historic home and just let it rot into the ground. There's nothing protecting that. So that seems to be what's happening today. So it's privately owned, but for whatever reason, the owner right now is not restoring it, is not doing anything with it. So it's literally just rotting to the ground. So that's what the Historic District Commission is trying to do. They're trying to pass a law called the Demolition by Neglect Law, saying you cannot just let this structure just, you know, be neglected this way.
And so they've actually put the red X on the outside of it. So if something happens and there's a fire, they don't want firefighters to go in and save. They wanted to just let it burn to the ground.
Yeah, pretty much. So like that's the problem with these laws. It's almost like the owner found this loophole that he doesn't have to restore it. He doesn't have to sell it. But if he lets it sit there to the point where it's actually condemned, there could be an emergency demolition that would have to occur, like in case of a fire, in case of something like that. So we're all questioning, like, why was this allowed to happen? Why was this allowed to go this far? And what can we do now to stop it?
And this owner is an older person who lives in New Hampshire. They're not local. They're not involved with the property. They're just kind of letting it sit there. I know that there's a tarp on the roof where there's a hole in the roof that hasn't been repaired in a number of years. So it really is a place that is, you know, just falling apart. Has anybody spoken to the owner? Does anybody know why the owner has let it fall into the state?
So, I mean, we like to think that he, you know, had the home's best interest, you know, in play. Like, we don't like to think that he just bought it and let it sit and rot into the ground. So the Historic District Commission is in touch with him, and there's actually going to be a meeting the end of May, May 23rd in Danvers. And this is what's on the record. Like, this is what's to be discussed. So it's kind of like a waiting and watching game right now. We're trying to find out what's going to happen. So we know he doesn't want to sell it to private ownership. What he wants is a historic society to take it on and turn it into a museum, which is an incredible idea. I would love to see that happen. The only problem with that is, you know, historic districts don't always have millions of dollars sitting around that it would take. So, like, there's no electricity, there's no heat, the core structure is damaged, there's a hole in the roof, like you said. So I feel like a number of people, myself included, would come along and love to be like, hey, I'll buy it, give it to me, I will restore it. But it comes down to the money, really.
Yeah, and one thing that we have learned here in New England over the years is that when it does come to restoring paranormal restoring historic properties, the paranormal world will come out and support that. We have the Oliver Estate in Middleborough, which was in a similar state, falling apart, but it was owned by the town. The town was ready to demolish it, and through people coming in and doing paid ghost hunting events there, they were able to raise the money to restore it, and now it's beautiful, it's fully restored, and it serves as a living museum, and people still go in there and investigate it, but it's a place that the town can use for other things as well, because of the work that people put into it from that end of things.
Yeah, and I think that's why like bringing attention to this is so important right now. So my friends Lori and Jeff from 1692 Before and After Tours, we started the Save Ingersoll's Tavern Facebook group. So, like, this is our goal, like, to bring attention to what's going on. So you have the Historic District Commission, like, working on their end legally, but, like, on our end, publicly, like you said, we can just bring awareness and hopefully turn this building into something that, you know, can go on for many, many years on Danvers soil.
And so are there plans to try and do some fundraising through that group to maybe have some funds donated for the restoration so that whatever happens, there's the possibility that you could get the ball rolling for whoever takes it over?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's where you would find that information. If a fundraising is going to occur, you would find it on that page because that's an effort that we're going to put forth. So it's really up to the owner. So if he turns around and says to Danvers, okay, I will donate it to the town, and Danvers turns around and says, wonderful, we don't have the money for this, though, that's where we're going to come in and try to raise those funds.
And then maybe somebody, you know, maybe there's a benefactor that comes in and makes the donation to just, you know, be involved in the full restoration of it.
Yeah, that would be the best case scenario. His only stipulation, the owner, is that he doesn't want anyone living there. So he wants it turned into a museum, which I would really love to see happen.
Sure, absolutely. And a place where people can come in, take tours, learn more about the witch trial. Because, you and I were kind of talking about this offline. There's different places where people can go to learn about the witch trials and learn about Salem history. But every place is a little bit different in the way that they present it and the way that they handle it. And some people come in looking for a more academic take. Some people come in looking for a more tourist take.
Yeah, and you know what? I think Salem could actually use more of the academic side because, as you and I both know, it's kind of turned into like this Halloween, like Disneyland, so to speak, which is a lot of fun and everyone has a great time in October. But you have to remember, like, why we're all here. It has to be because of history. It has to be because of these innocent lives lost. So you can't have in Salem City today everyone whooping it up and like having a great time in October, and then in the next town over, this house that is so important to what actually happened here just sitting and decaying into the ground, which is completely wrong.
And you actually have a few different efforts online to kind of spread the word of Salem and other places as well. Tell everybody about what it is that you do as the Queen of Halloween.
Well, I have my Queen of Halloween page, which I've been doing for what feels like forever. But I also have a page called Life, Death, Salem, where I document the yearly happenings of 1692 and the trials, the important persons, the important structures. So it goes beyond Salem. It goes, you know, into all of Essex County and the buildings and the people and the lives. It's just my way of kind of honoring their memory and keeping the story alive, because I think it's really important that we remember it.
And you've also been to this area, and you've come and visited the Lizzie Borden house and even had some ghostly experiences here.
Oh, I had some very good ghost experiences at the Lizzie Borden house. I can't wait to get back there. Yeah, I do enjoy ghost hunting. I do enjoy haunted history and all of the history of New England. I find completely fascinating, for sure.
Well, I definitely want to have you come on Spooky South Coast when we're back doing that show and share some of those experiences with us. But do you want to just give us one good Lizzie Borden ghost story before we let you go?
Yeah, sure. So when I was walking through the Lizzie Borden house, and it was actually during the day, I was going through Lizzie's room, through her bedroom, and the back of my neck started feeling really hot. Okay, so I was like, okay, no big deal. I was just kind of enamored with my situation. And it got so painful to the point I asked the person I was with, I was like, what's going on back here? And there was a huge scratch on the back of my neck. And when I tell people that story, they're like, oh my God, Lizzie axed you. Like, she tried to tried to get me for going through her house or something. So that was pretty cool. And it was a daytime event, so that was very interesting as well.
I can tell you from my experiences, if you were physically accosted in that house, it was probably more Andrew Borden that was doing it.
Possibly, yeah.
So he doesn't...
He wasn't a very nice person, was he?
He doesn't really like strong women, so, you know, maybe you were a threat to him in some way, and he wanted to let you know it.
Yeah, he knew I was coming for him, so...
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. Remind everybody again how they can follow you and how they can follow along with the attempt to save the tavern.
So you can check it out on my Instagram page, Life Death Salem, or the Queen of Halloween on Facebook and Instagram. But the most important source, I think, right now is Save Ingersoll's Tavern, and it's a Facebook group started by my friends at 1692 Before and After Tours.
Well, Danny, please keep us up to date with everything that's going on. I'm sure we'll be talking more about this in the future, and we look forward to not only saving it, but getting to go in there and see it for ourselves once it's all restored, because I think this is all going to work out. I think this is going to happen.
I really do, too. I'm very concerned about the house, but I actually have absolute faith that it's going to not only be saved, but restored, so I'm really looking forward to that day.
All right. Thank you so much. You have a great day and a great weekend. We'll talk again soon.
You too, Tim. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. That is Danny October, the Queen of Halloween. And again, sign up for that Facebook group. Follow along. There's been a lot of great information shared in there over the past few days since I joined. And it's very helpful in learning more about the history and also learning about how you can get involved in this effort, because we care very much about preserving history in the paranormal world. And certainly I'm going to use this platform that I have to always push for saving historic structures. So if you want to call in and chime in on that, 508-996-0500. If you want to reach out via app chat, you can do that too. You can also send me emails, tim@wbsm.com. If you maybe want to get involved with this, if you want to make a donation, if you want to, maybe you've got the means to say, hey, if the town, the city takes it over, I'll come in and I'll restore it. Whatever it may be, we would appreciate any help that you can give. All right, I am going to take a break. We'll be back in just a few moments. Welcome back in. We're going to be going into the newsroom in just a moment. When we come back on the other side, we can take your calls, 508-996-0500. You can also send in app chat messages on the WBSM app. Hopefully you got that first code of the day, your first win cash code of the day, but we'll have another one for you in the next hour and every hour through the 5 p.m. hour. And when you hear those codes, enter those at WBSM.com or on the WBSM app on the win cash page, and you'll be entered to win each hour the $100 prize, and each time you enter, you'll also get an entry into the grand prize drawing for $30,000. Your chance to win cash on WBSM, brought to you by Architect Managed IT Services. All right, now though, it's time to go into the newsroom and get all of the national and international headlines from Phil Devitt.
The vice president heads to Arizona to talk abortion. The House Speaker and Trump join forces today. And how about a concert this weekend without leaving the couch?
From the WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Vice President Kamala Harris is headed to Arizona today after the state Supreme Court upheld a near-total ban on abortions that was put in place 160 years ago. She'll be in Tucson for an event focusing on abortion and the Biden administration's efforts to keep abortion legal. Harris was just in Phoenix last month to show opposition against attempts to limit or restrict abortion. Arizona is considered a battleground state in this year's election, which President Biden narrowly won in 2020. Former President Trump won Arizona comfortably in 2016. Legal experts are weighing in following the passing of O.J. Simpson. Most say his double murder acquittal was in large part due to attorney Johnny Cochran's skilled defense. He convinced the jury of his innocence, concluding the case with a famous line.
It makes no sense. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
Simpson didn't have any other run-ins with the law until 2008, when he and his friends burst into a Vegas hotel room with a gun on the belief that he was retrieving his stolen sports memorabilia. He served 9 years of a 33-year sentence before he was released in 2017. An updated report on the severe storms that tore across the state of Mississippi earlier this week now finds at least 2 people were killed and 6 others injured. That from the Mississippi Emergency Management Agency, which also reported over 170 homes and businesses damaged or destroyed. House Speaker Mike Johnson is set to make an appearance alongside Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago. Mark Mayfield fills us in.
Reports say the two will hold a news conference Friday focused on election integrity. The former president has repeatedly claimed the 2020 election was rigged against him. The event comes as Johnson faces threats from some conservative Republicans to oust him as speaker if he moves forward with funding for Ukraine. I'm Mark Mayfield.
A reminder for taxpayers when it comes to charitable deduction rules. The IRS says those who itemize must remember that donations must be to qualified organizations. Other rules include the donation must have been during the proper tax year, there must be a record of it, and the total deduction cannot be more than 60% of your adjusted gross income. And if you can't make it to Madison Square Garden before Billy Joel's residency comes to an end, you can watch a performance from your living room this weekend. The 100th Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden airs on CBS and streams on Paramount Plus Sunday night. The 2-hour broadcast is taken from his March 29th concert, which was the 100th show of his Garden residency. The Piano Man's run at the Garden wraps up in July, and Joel's first ever broadcast TV special airs at 9 p.m.
WBSM Sports.
The Boston Red Sox home to play the Los Angeles Angels after another loss to Baltimore tonight at 7:10. The Celtics hope to shake off a loss to the New York Knicks when they play the Charlotte Hornets at TD Garden at 7:30. And the Bruins on the road visiting the Pittsburgh Penguins on Saturday night.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Advisories are in effect until 2 this afternoon for strong gusty winds up to 50 miles per hour, a potential for power outages. Coastal flood advisory as well, up to 1 foot of inundation. In the meantime, this morning we have fog. We have that chance for thunderstorms. Temperature in the mid-50s for this afternoon. Upper 50s, potential for thunderstorm activity and those gusty winds. Overnight tonight, partial cloudiness, mid-40s. And then tomorrow, partial sunshine, lower 50s with breezy conditions. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Ceci del Carmen on New Bedford News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
You don't know what you're doing, babe, it must be art. So that's U2's Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me. That's from the soundtrack to Batman Forever. And if you have the Vice network on your cable or access to it from whatever streaming service you use, there's a lot of good programs on there. They've done a lot of they do Dark Side of the Ring, which is a great show for wrestling fans. Diving deeper into some of the, out of the ring stories of wrestlers and controversial events. But they've also spun that off to Dark Side of the 90s and Dark Side of the 2000s. But they also have a series called Icons Unearthed, where they do a deep dive into popular intellectual properties. So there's one going on right now for Lord of the Rings, but there's also one going on for Batman. They've had, I think, 4 episodes now, and the first 3 dealt with the first 2 Batman films, the 2 Tim Burton films, Batman and Batman Returns. But then they also will dive into the most recent episode this week was Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. And then next week starts to get into the Christopher Nolan Batman films. But the stuff that they talk about in there, you know, we hear little bits and pieces about these movies and what goes on behind the scenes, but these are the people who are actually involved that are taking part in this, people who worked on the productions. And it's so interesting to hear what was really going on. And to hear people who were involved. See, I always said, oh, you know, I think Batman and Robin was not a great film, but George Clooney got unfair flack for his portrayal of Bruce Wayne and Batman, that he could have been a really good Bruce Wayne and a really good Batman if given the right material. And then you hear people that were involved in the production that say, hey, George Clooney had no interest in being Batman. He just wanted the paycheck. He just wanted to further his movie career. He wanted to be in a blockbuster, a summer blockbuster. Oh, okay. Here I was thinking, you know, he would have been the perfect. When they cast him, I was like, what a great choice. He's going to be an amazing Bruce Wayne. And I just assumed that they just dropped the ball on it. Anyway, so check that out on Vice. Icons Unearthed, Batman. Very interesting. Of course, we all know Michael Keaton's the real Batman and might really be Batman. 508-996-0500 if you want to call in and chime in. One of the things that we talked about earlier this morning, if you missed the discussion, there's a podcast out there that Tom Brady was on recently. And in that podcast, he was asked, if an NFL team called you and said, we need a quarterback, would you be willing to unretire? And he said that he would be open to that idea. Right now, his focus is on trying to become an NFL owner and apparently becoming a broadcast analyst for Fox. But I guess the ownership thing is what's on the forefront of his mind. So he says, I don't think they'll let me be an owner of a team and then play for a team. I guess they could maybe allow him to play for Vegas if he's going to be, or, you know, if he's going to own a piece of the Raiders, they could let him play for that team. But he certainly couldn't play for another team and own a piece of a team. You know, Michael Jordan owns the part of the Bobcats, or the Hornets. Yeah, they're the Hornets now. But he can't go play for somebody else. So they couldn't do the same for Tom Brady either. So he would have to give up that dream for now. But as Roger Goodell said, it could take a while before that all comes to fruition. So why not, in the meantime, play another season or two, especially if the right team comes calling? Would the Patriots come calling? Would they say, you know what, Tom? We are going to draft a quarterback in the upcoming draft, but we want to give them a chance to mature a little bit before we just throw them out there. Do you want to come back on a 2-year deal, kind of lead the way, end your career where it started? And you know, because now it's not like it was a few years ago when Bill Belichick thought Tom Brady was standing in the way of the future of the team by saying, I want to play till I'm 50. And Belichick's like, well, we don't want to not develop the next quarterback because you want to play till you're 50, when in reality you might not make it. Your body might give out mid-season and we'll have nobody really ready to go. This would give them a chance to have that person ready to go, but to also give Brady a season or two or maybe even 3. He'll be, I believe, 47 when the season starts, because I think he's a few months older than me. And then, you know, maybe he does get to 50. But he could be a valuable person to mentor the next quarterback. And he would go into this position knowing that that's what he was doing. unlike before where he saw Jimmy Garoppolo as a threat. And, you know, time heals all wounds, or as Groucho told us, time wounds all heals. But I think the time has come where he could be in that position. If the Patriots want to put somebody in that position, they might just say the best bet is to take that rookie and throw them out there on the field, have them go through the growing pains now when we're going through growing pains as an organization, and then see where we go from there. Take off your nostalgia glasses. Take off your number 12 jersey. And tell me which scenario makes the most sense. 508-996-0500. Send me an app chat message on the WBSM app. Right now, though, we're going to take a break. Be back in a few moments.
To the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. I move into the country, I'm gonna eat me a lot of peaches. I move into the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. I move into the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. Peaches come from a can.
You know where you can get some peaches? Peaches that come in a can. They were put there by a man in a factory downtown. You know where you can get those? And everything else you can imagine at the Butcher Shop. 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford. Now, they're closed this week. They're taking a little vacation time, but they'll be open again next week. And they will have not only everything that you can imagine when it comes to meats. I mean, come on. They get you the stuff that you can't find anywhere else. But then the stuff that you have everywhere else, they've got the best of it at the butcher shop. High quality, fine cuts of meat, cut the way that you want it. You want a nice 2-inch thick sirloin? They'll cut that for you. You like it a little bit thinner? They'll do that too. Celebrity pork chops, giant chicken wings, lobster, fish, everything you can imagine. But also, the shelves of the butcher shop are filled with all the grocery items that you need. So if you want to support a local business, a local family, the Pinaretta family, that's been doing this for 40 years, and you want to keep things local, the butcher shop is the place to shop. Everything from steaks to soccer balls. We're not kidding. They actually carry soccer balls. They have a beer and wine cellar that can't be beat, and they make great food every day that you can come in and buy ready to go. Take it with you for lunch or for dinner. Heck, I've seen people actually just stand there and eat it in the butcher shop. Some of them just can't wait. So make it the place where you go to get your meat for sure, but also where you will find so much more. The Butcher Shop, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford. They'll be opening up again next week, ready to serve you. And if there's something that you want that you can't find anywhere else, talk to Eric. He will get it for you. That's the level of service they give you at the butcher shop. Again, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford. My number here, 508-996-0500. We've got about 10 minutes to go before we will turn things over to Chris McCarthy in South Coast Now. I'm sure he'll be talking more about the BID that's been proposed for downtown New Bedford. And certainly that's something that we'll be following along with here as the discussions will continue, because it has been pushed off to a June meeting to be discussed even further. There's a lot of important work being done at these council meetings. And I know, you know, when the caller called earlier, he was, you know, kind of, well, why are they pushing this off so late? I like the fact that the councilors are doing their due diligence and saying, you know, we want to gather more information. They don't just make decisions arbitrarily and off the cuff. Now, that might bog things down a little bit and maybe upset people, but that's the thoughtfulness that you hope a counselor will put into their job, or any elected official will put into their job. So there'll be a lot more discussion about that coming up. This weekend, I think a lot of people are probably going to be sitting at home in front of their computer. TurboTax Open, or Tax Slayer, or IRS.gov, wherever you might do your taxes. It all depends on what your level of comfortability is with doing your taxes yourself. Maybe some of you actually went to a tax preparer. But everybody will be getting ready because tax day is next week. If you haven't done them yet, there's still time. I wouldn't try to rush it. That's where you make mistakes. And that's how you trigger audits. Take your time, take it slow. If you can't get it done, file for an extension. 508-996-0500. Good morning. You are on WBSM.
Tim, great show as always.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk to you about something that's really disturbing. I've been trying to reach one of my city councilors since around New Year's Day. I've left many messages on his phone. I've left many messages through the city council office, and not one return phone call. Hmm. Not one. Now, the way I look at it is, I'm a constituent. He's an elected official. That's all I need to say. Now, I understand that he has the right to some privacy. We all do. We all have things that we have to do that nobody needs to know about. But for three entire months, not one return phone call from a city councilor to a constituent?
And it's the number that you got from the city council website?
Yes, and it's his voice on the phone.
Okay, so that was my next question.
They're correct. The office is correct. They give me the number. I call the number. It's his voice. So I gave up, and I finally decided, well, I'm going to leave messages with the clerks. And I've left messages with the clerks, and there's still no response.
Well, do you want to say the name of the counselor, or do you want to maybe message me privately about it, and we'll see if we can foster a connection there?
I will email you privately. I think I have your email address. I don't think it's fair to the counselor. It might be embarrassing for the counselor if I publicly mention his name. I will definitely address it with you privately if you prefer that I do that. That's not an issue.
Yeah, and then I'll forward it on and say, hey, just to let you know in case you missed it somehow, Bob's trying to get in touch with you.
Yep, for 3 months, Tim. There's no excuse for that.
Yeah, I can only think of a few people that might, have that lack of communication skills. And I'm not talking about city councilors. I mean, people in the world. Three people in the world that wouldn't answer an email after 3 months or a phone call after 3 months.
Well, perhaps. But to me, he's an elected official. I'm a constituent. That's all anyone needs to know.
Well, we'll see what we can do for you.
Thank you, Tim.
All right. Have a good weekend.
You too.
And I've got to take a break here. We'll be back in just a few moments.
App.
That's going to do it for me for today, and I will be back next week. I hope everybody out there has a great week.